You're listening to the Zetidic Newscast on the Zetidic News Network with your hosts, Dave, and Xavier Diamant. Proceed by inquiry.
Welcome to a very special episode of the Zetidic Newscast. It's episode 12. We're your hosts, Dave, and Xavier Diamant. It's August 25th, 2020, and we got a jam-packed show ready for you guys. First of all, I'll just say we are, to my knowledge, technically right now, we are live streaming a world first in that we're the first news category content provider live streaming on the Theta Anycast network. Not to be confused with Theta.tv, which is more of a curated platform, but rather we are streaming on the Backbone, the decentralized peer-to-peer video streaming network, which is powered by users. And we hope to connect with a very special guest in about 15 minutes, and that's Bix Weir, who founded the Road to Ruta theory and roadtoruta.com. Bix has been in the financial industry for more than 20 years, and in his later sort of career has done a lot of internet muckraking. He's really responsible for much of our involvement with the Theta Network. I personally did not learn of it until I saw some of Bix's videos. So as part of our beta testing for the long-term network planning we're doing here, I thought we could get him on and do sort of a beta test of the live stream. So you can click this link and see how to actually do that. You have to download a client. I know it's a little arduous right now, but that's part of growing the network and, showing our support for it so that new sort of embedded tools make it even more accessible so that we can adopt it, maybe right here on the side panel, when we have these sort of live interviews or events. But once again, this will be hopefully the first live stream news-related interview of its kind on the Theta Network. So we'll talk more about Bix and his background, his theory, hopefully when he joins our video conference here in 12 minutes or so. Couple other updates on the website. We are working on a contributor tab. I covered this in one of the recent cyber chats I uploaded. You can click it here if you want. You can even fill it out and provide us your information, but no promises as far as doing anything with it at this point. I'm still trying to figure out the model, the page layout, the types of information that we want to collect. And there's also a profile function. So if you become a contributor, we envision a, sort of chat, social network function, as well as the ability to, be granted upload permissions so you can create your own content and submit it for publication on the Zetidic News Network. Also, Xavier published a awesome article August 6th, so much earlier in the month, but we haven't got together in quite a while. Abject expertise, Delphi method hegemony, and the cult of sci-fi credentialism. And I tell you, just with the trajectory of the mask wearing and all that it implies, I couldn't agree more with what you said in the article. And you highlight Ethan Siegel, this total hack from Forbes. You want to maybe get into what he is promoting here in his article and what's really at play here?
Well, so he's an astrophysicist, of course, the high priest within the sci-fi credentialist movement. And he's basically saying that, look, despite the internet democratizing information and allowing ease of access, thousands of libraries at your fingertips, you really shouldn't be doing your own research when it comes to science.
Hmm. What a general term.
Interesting. I mean, and let me just read this quote. So this was a quote that really stood out to me because I felt like it's just emblematic of the entire force majeure, this sort of doctrine and mantra of science will save us. And that is, he says, even those of us with excellent critical thinking skills and lots of experience trying to dig up the truth behind a variety of claims are lacking one important asset, the scientific expertise necessary to understand any finds or claims in the context of the full state of knowledge of your field.
Wow.
That's an unreasonable criteria, but
yeah. Where is the bar exactly on that? How do you get that a stamp of approval? Having context of the full state of knowledge of your field. Is there any? I mean, there are experts, right? Expert in every field, right? But no expert ever claims to have full knowledge. That is quite a high bar that he's setting there.
Yeah, it's sort of an impossible criteria. Interesting. That's supposedly coming from a scientist. It's part of why the scientific consensus is so remarkably valuable. It only exists when the overwhelming majority of qualified professionals all hold the same consistent professional opinion. It is truly one of the most important and valuable types of expertise that humanity has ever developed.
Wow.
And that is from the Forbes article in the sort of kitschy science section online. And it's titled, "You Must Not Do Your Own Research When It Comes to Science." I mean, it's almost like an Onion article, you know? I mean, it's just unreal.
But I've come into this mentality protesting the public water fluoridation program. I remember I had presented some evidence, which I had garnered on the internet through my own research, going onto the manufacturer's website who made the fluoride that was added to the public water supply, and bringing the material safety data sheet to the city council and just reading what was on their material safety data sheet. And it said it was corrosive, you know, and that the manufacturer disclaimed themselves of liability once it left, you know, their warehouse and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It required, you know, I forget the NSF safety fire hazard level, but it was required, you know, heavy duty equipment, protective gear, and so on. And after a certain number of like of these Delphi method run meetings, and that's something for you guys to look up. We've covered it previously, the Delphi method. I found myself in a room. I was one of two people not associated with the city who were opposed to their practice, and they kicked me out of the meeting because I like didn't follow Robert's rules of order or whatever, because I tried to call them out on a lie they were saying. And and my wife, who was still in the room, she, you know, they didn't really know who she was necessarily, and they felt, I guess, free to speak after I had been kicked out.
Mm.
And the oral health section chief was saying that, oh, he's just a conspiracy theorist. You know, you really need to have some expertise when you try to read, you know, information you get on the internet. And that was, it was as base as that. And I'm like, but you guys.
Hey.
Hey, is that Bix Weir?
Yeah, we got Bix.
It is. How are you?
Hey, awesome. Thanks for joining. We're just chatting up a storm here. Can you see us okay?
I can, yeah. Gotta cool. Love that theta.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, we were sort of brought together through theta in a way. We're actually technically, Bix, I believe, now I don't have a way to verify it because I'm not running another, you know, peer. We're live streaming right now on the backbone of the theta network. So nice. I've got my stream key. Now, that's not theta.tv. That's the backbone, which they call Anycast, which is part of the Edge node. Right?
So do you earn Theta Fuel for your broadcast?
So if you're running the Edge node and you have a peer, you earn T-Fuel for any data you transmit to them. But I don't think right now that Anycast is a beta version. So the tokenomics of like paying T-Fuel to send and stream this video and me earning the T-Fuel for people watching it, it's not there yet. They said it was free for now so that they can encourage people to test it. So that's what I'm trying to do here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun to be in an experiment. I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I don't have a way to verify it other than the fact that my stream software is successfully connected to the server and I've entered my stream key and everything. So I think it's a go. But what I'm going to do is hopefully, you know, all things go well here in the recording and I'll start restreaming this interview 24/7 on that same backbone so we can actually go and test that. I've been streaming the much-censored part one of the documentary Plandemic 24/7 as well. And, I mean, I guess we should just go ahead and get into it. The whole idea and model that I'm trying to sort of explore and hopefully take advantage of is, you know, we're running one of the top 150 Guardian nodes. And we've been wanting to, we do long form podcasting as we'll do tonight. We do special reports and articles and this and that. But, you know, as you know, starting out, where do you build your platform? Right. That's what everybody's asking themselves. And that's what we've been asking ourselves, you know, as you know, we're creating more content, but YouTube is, I mean, my partner here, Xavier, yeah. You know, he mentioned, YouTube just banned a whole bunch of new or popular channels. So in the face of that, you know, Theta really piqued my interest, not just to get my Lambo, but to actually, if I can generate enough T-Fuel from my Guardian node operation, I can actually, I don't even have to spend dollars on content delivery. It can just go right into independent providing of, you know, censor-free you know, reporting or whatever it is we want to do. So,
crucial in these times with all the information suppression.
Yep. So, Bix, I guess we should go ahead and, introduce you, to our listeners. You know, our listeners are all over the map, as I'm sure yours are as well, but I thought it would help to just sort of, help you understand and the listeners know sort of how this conversation came together. So I actually learned of you back when you were posting articles about, you know, the gold and silver manipulation. I know that GATA did a lot of work, you know, basically criticizing the London fix and all of the manipulation of the commodities markets. And I think you were right there with, like, you know, Jim Willey and Peter Schiff, as far as, like, my staple, like, gold, silver, you know, reporting guys. And I graduated in 2008, you know, right into the financial crisis, right? And not like what we're dealing with now, but back then it certainly seemed, you know, very dramatic. But in those times, you know, I was like trying to earn money at the same time I'm trying to like understand what it is, where it comes from. And I'm like looking at it, it's got pyramid on it. And I'm just like, what's going on here? Right. So, and I know you mentioned that a lot in your postings as well. You know, that led me on this trajectory to sort of figure out, well, what is money, you know, creature of Jekyll Island, you know, yeah, for many years, you were just sort of like in that same camp as far as I was concerned. But then I got married in 2015. A friend of mine, an activist friend, gave me a Bitcoin on a piece of paper. And I didn't know what the hell to do with it. I just out of respect, basically, I kept it in my safe. I didn't really understand. It was like worth $240 at the time. But over time, you know, I just sort of casually watched the dollar price of Bitcoin ebb and flow. It would drop precipitously and then it would grow beyond where it was before. And I was like, there's something to this. It's almost like, you know, regardless of what the financial press is saying, there, you know, the people have sort of socially decided otherwise. That's what I started to sort of realize. And then when the dollar price value got to like 6,000, I started hearing like guys I love, like Peter Schiff, talk about it's going to go to zero. And I'm like, one of these is right on the, you know, and the other one's wrong. And that caused me to just look more into it. Eventually, I came upon Road to Ruta. And even though I know you did all this writing on gold and silver and whatnot, I had never encountered this Road to Ruta theory. And so what I'd love to do is, if you could just sort of summarize in as quick a time as you can. I mean, I know you have seminars and stuff, and I know you get irritated at people who haven't educated themselves to Road to Ruta, but a lot of people still haven't heard it, you know, and how blockchain plays into that. Because the other pivotal moment for me, Bix, was listening to your interview with Cliff High and Jim Sinclair and Bill Holter, because those are other guys that I, you know, encountered on my road to Ruta. And then you guys had that sort of pivotal conversation where these old school gold bugs sort of got it as far as blockchain's concerned and how that could potentially, you know, not only was it an invention, an innovation, but it could perhaps, you know, socially turn the tide and change the rules as far as the finance system is concerned. Because the old adage, you know, whoever has the gold makes the rules, you know, seem to always be true until this came about. So, Bix Weir, if you don't mind summarizing the Road to Ruta, you know, from your perspective, having 20 plus years in finance and internet muckraking.
Well, yeah, it's, how do you sum up the Road to Ruta? I used to really struggle with it because as I first discovered these documents out of the Fed Boston, I was trying to wrap my head around what it means. What does it all mean? Could the Fed, who I had pretty much fought for 7 years straight, saying you're the devil, you're the worst, you're evil, along with my GATA friends, I'm coming out of this, my analysis, saying, holy crap, I think the Fed's doing this all on purpose. I think they're doing it to try to destroy the banking system altogether and replace it with something new. At the time, it would be a gold standard. Mm-hmm. And that really blew my own mind, alienated a lot of my my GATA friends.
Yeah.
They've since come around for the most part, or at least they're cordial to me now. And it was an amazing awakening. I mean, we all know that the case for gold and the case for silver and the case for cryptocurrencies are pretty much the same case. The question is, what do you want to use as currency when this old system that we know is flawed and failing, what do we want to use next? And historically, there have only been really two options, a gold standard or a silver standard.
Right.
And That's why, you know, gold and silver had done so well over thousands of years, is that politicians and people love to print their own money. They love to create things out of paper and say, this is the new money. It's different this time. And normally it's every 7 to 10 years that would blow up. Everybody be scrambling back to get their gold and silver back. Many people didn't even get rid of their gold and silver. That's why it worked so well in the old transitions back to a gold and silver standard. Gold ore and ore, basically, bimetallic or either one of them. They're both way better. And then in 2008, you were just talking about how you were getting out of college. Was it college or high school?
College.
Okay. So you're getting out of college, and that's when what was written in the sand in the Road to Ruta documents back that I found in 2007 actually came true. And that was on 9/11, 2008. That $500 billion exited the money market funds in a matter of a couple hours, and we're on the brink of a total destruction of our global economic system. Now, that moment and in the subsequent days where they went to Congress for the bailout, that moment had been played over and over and over again for the past 100-something years. There have been so many times that we've been on the brink of crashing and going back, but every time, because the bankers have gotten us so entrenched in their system, so dependent upon their system and the politicians, it's extremely difficult to do.
Right.
I mean, you're telling everybody, if you do this, if you don't bail out the banks, you're going to destroy everybody's savings account, checking account, retirement fund, the value of your house and your car, and everything would stop. And they put us in that position. So to find out that the Fed was actually trying to destroy the system on purpose was a real eye-opener to me. And then I saw it happen in 2008. On from there, we bailed out the bankers. You know, I don't know what else I can say. We bailed them out once again. And you can ask anybody, walk down the street and ask them, hey, do you think we should have bailed out the banks in 2008? I guarantee you 99.9% will say, hell no.
Right.
And then you ask them another question, which is more important. Will you vote for a bailout again? If the same thing happens, will you vote for a bailout again? And immediately they say, no way, I would never do that. And then you probe a little deeper, and what if you lost your savings account, your checking account, your health insurance, your house value, all that stuff that you hold so dearly and you've worked your whole life for?
Yep.
And then they come around and say, yeah, I guess we better bail out the banks. And that's what we've been for over 100 years. It's crazy.
So do you see the invention of blockchain, not, you know, to confuse that with Bitcoin, as sort of a social decision we sort of made collectively, or is it a part of this sort of white hat operation to, you know, reform the system, at least until we have replicators and don't need money anymore? Or is it both?
Yeah. I look at Bitcoin a little differently. I do look at it as something people within the government put together. I think one of the lead guys was Alan Greenspan, the head of the Fed, also the world's best computer programmer from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. The guy was, that's all he did. And nobody really knew it. They just wondered why is the biggest gold bug in the world being put as the head of the Federal Reserve in 1987? And nobody really had an explanation for that. And if you read Greenspan's writings back in the 70s, he wrote the paper Gold and Economic Freedom.
Right.
I mean, that was probably the best paper you'll ever read on the necessity of a gold standard. And then you see the Road to Ruin comic books and Teacher's Guide come out in 1981 when they were, Reagan put together the Gold Commission, deciding in 1981, again, are we going to do it? Are we going to go off the fiat money system, or are we going to continue to rig the markets? And they decided, or go back to a gold standard, they decided to continue to rig the markets. Paul Volcker says in his book, the one thing I wish I did was rig the gold market, keep the gold price down. Well, that's kind of funny coming from hearing him say it, because it wasn't him doing it. It was the Fed Boston doing it through Alan Greenspan, who was at the time, I think he was off the Council of Economic Advisors, but he was still highly involved with his mentor, a guy named Arthur Burns, who was the head of the Fed in the 70s. And at that time, Paul Volcker took over for him. So, Paul Volcker didn't need to rig the gold market because Alan Greenspan was already doing it with his computer programs.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get to, let's get right to Bitcoin. And I didn't understand it right at the beginning. I mean, it was everything I fought against. Anything electronic will go away when the banks crash. And I can still hear myself saying that. I have old videos of me just trying to slaughter Bitcoin. And I look at it back now, I go, what a fool you were. You just didn't understand it. And Cliff High finally called me up and said, hey, you're going to really be embarrassed by your stance on Bitcoin. We better have a talk about it.
Mm.
And so we talked through it for a couple days, and he kind of led me in the direction of understanding what I liked about gold. and applying that to Bitcoin, and Bitcoin was better in every single area. Except back then, we didn't have the history that gold had. I would say now we do have a history in cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin's got 10-year history. And you know, I think Bitcoin failed originally slightly in the early days, but like Litecoin has never failed. The blockchain has always performed as it was meant to be. So there is history there. There is sound, solid history with people attacking it left and right. You know, if you're a computer hacker, that's your number one kind of trophy would be to hack Bitcoin. It can't be done. We all know that. But it would be a number one trophy. And so I came to understand that Bitcoin was more than just an electronic asset. It was actually an asset that had no third party that had to be involved at all. It was a standalone asset. There was no third party that needed to be alive and kicking, so to speak, for if you held your Bitcoin in your own possession, for you to have a valid, scarce asset that was either used for, I wish it was, you could use it for as a means of exchange. Unfortunately, the Bitcoin core developers didn't want that. They wanted that store of value to be locked up because most of them were, you know, newly arraigned 100 millionaires and billionaires. They didn't want to risk at all anything with Bitcoin. They would just rather have everything just stop and lock it up. And they wanted it for big transactions only. That's why, you know, Bitcoin Cash split off. Litecoin was created. And that's great. Just, truthfully, it's the best thing that ever happened that the Bitcoin maximalists got so hard-headed, because it opened a door for everybody to say, oh my God, we don't need just Bitcoin. These altcoins and tokens can do amazing things in every single area known to man. And that was really exciting to understand that. Although, you know, they are subject to manipulation like everything else. So that's kind of my transition. I got out of I got out of my gold a while back when I discovered silver, but I got out of a lot of my precious metals when I got into Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. I try to keep it at about half and half of my investing. It's hard to do, obviously, with cryptocurrencies being so volatile. But let's hope that silver gets freely traded. We can watch silver be volatile.
Yeah, now talk about that a little bit. You know, big core part of your Road to Ruta theory is that, if I understand correctly, there's a lot more gold that is available both above ground and below ground than is publicly reported. So what does that mean for the oligarchs? Is that just an artificial scarcity to keep us monetarily enslaved, or is there something more to that story? And, you know, of course, you talk a lot about silver these days, and how that's almost the inverse situation. What's going on there?
Well, with gold, basically gold versus Bitcoin, the beauty of Bitcoin, it's locked at 21 million coins. It's a fixed scarcity. It's mathematically in the cards for Bitcoin to only have 21 million. Now you can have forks and splits and all that. That's fine. Just like you can have different forms of currency. You can have a dollar and a yuan and a euro and all that. But as far as Bitcoin, 21 million. And when you compare that to something like gold, that the establishment, the banking establishment will tell you there's only been 200,000 tons that have ever been mined in human history. And they say it over and over and over again, thinking the more they say it, the more people are going to believe it. But the problem is there's so much evidence that that is not true. It is not 200,000 tons. It's more like millions of tons. Mm-hmm. And if you add up all the gold, like the gold at Yamashita's gold in the Philippines, 100% true. If you read many of my GATA friends refused to read all the documentation that Sterling and Peggy Seagrave put together. They wrote a book called Gold Warriors. They wrote a couple books. And their documentation is unbeatable, that mm-hmm. there was at least 300,000 tons of gold that were buried in, I think it was 80 or so caves within the Philippines, all booby-trapped right after World War II so that the U.S. didn't get their hands on it. Many of those have been found. Some are still there in the Philippines. There's treasure hunters out there still looking for it. But you read the documentation, and it comes from Supreme Court hearings. It comes from congressional testimony. It's the actual documents of the gold being deposited in these banks. It is the funding of the deep state, basically, has been for, you know, decades, since the 1950s.
Yeah. Another, so, yeah, I think that the Western aristocracy would probably rather us believe there's no such competing faction on East. And, you know, isn't China one of the oldest civilizations? Doesn't it stand to reason they have their own, you know, at least equivalent amount of gold mine that they've never released to us? I mean, wasn't a lot of the gold that the U.S. initially, you know, used to develop our country, wasn't that borrowed by, you know, from the East?
It was, what I can tell, it is borrowed with the collateral of the gold in the Grand Canyon. So the Chinese, there are quite a few documents, and the 1934 gold bonds that were issued in staggering amounts. I've found some gold bars that depict the loan with cryptography on them, and it shows the Grand Canyon and all that stuff that was done to hide the gold in the Grand Canyon.
Right.
There's plenty of evidence that leads to that the U.S. had all this gold in the Grand Canyon, but they didn't, for some reason, they didn't want to release it, so they did a gold swap with China. $300 million is what's on some of the gold bars. Now, if you add up all the gold bonds, the bearer bonds that were found all over Asia, clearly it's much more than the $300 million. And don't forget, $300 million back then,
right?
That was gold was, I think, $35 an ounce at the time. So, you know, $300 million is a hell of a lot of ounces of gold. But all this stems from, you know, what is being hidden. A lot of it is because they found all this gold in the Grand Canyon. They had to do something to keep the system intact. In the early 1900s, the U.S. only had about 100 to 120 million ounces of gold circulating as money. Hardly anything. And then they go and find billions and billions of ounces within the Grand Canyon. You've got a problem that Woodrow Wilson was confronted with. The bankers came, you know, 100%. I believe the Jekyll Island story is 100% true. I know it's true. But what is not talked about, G. Edward Griffith doesn't talk about in that book, is what were they talking about at that meeting? And what was the reason for the meeting, and then why did Woodrow Wilson, who hated banks, sign off on this idea of creating the Federal Reserve System? It was because of all the assessments at the time were saying, if you introduce billions of ounces of gold into a system that only has 100 or 200 million ounces, and it's used as money and is the wealth of, you know, a chunk of the population that's very important, the wealthy, you're going to cause chaos. You're going to cause distortions in the economic system. That shit like that overthrows governments and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
So they decided to lock it up. And it's been locked up ever since. The Federal Reserve has had free reign to do what they want. They even put it on the back of the $1 bill. If you look at the back of the $1 bill, you got the all-seeing eye, the pyramid. Yes, there are ancient pyramids that have been destroyed that sit within the Grand Canyon, doing a lot of research there now, all named after Egyptian gods and Hindu gods. It's crazy. The world that we grew up with, you know, the Grand Canyon, you know, you walk over to the cliff and you look down and you say, oh boy, that's nice. And that's all you do.
Yeah.
That's all you're allowed to do, really.
Right.
There's not many, there's a few trails you can go on, but they don't go anywhere.
That's a very good point. Very, very good point, Bix. Now, I want to get something clear to the listeners, because there's a lot of competing sort of white hat theories out there. One that, you know, caught my interest over the years was promoted heavily by David Wilcock. That's the whole mass arrests sort of scenario. And he did a lot of reporting on this situation with the global collateral accounts, which, you know, have to do with the gold and so on. But, you know, I never heard him say anything about, you know, there being, pyramids or locked up gold or that they did this on purpose for, you know, beneficial reasons. I'd love to just understand, you know, because, you talk about the road to Ruta, you know, taking us to a better place. But at the same time, you know, you've got Mnuchin pressing his button in the basement of the Treasury, sending checks out, you know, little crumbs to the people who've been decimated by the very same government. And I want to believe that we're going to a better place and that, you know, maybe blockchain is a stepping stone there. But it's kind of difficult, right? I mean, in today's times. So what's your take on all that? I mean, is it a white hat contingency that is doing this for benevolent purposes, or is it kind of like a mixture, white, black, red hat type thing that, you know, it's going to be better than what we got, but it's still kind of an ugly duckling.
I'm 100% agreement that it's very confusing. For me, I mean, I was talking about good guys long before the Q movement, and they were talking about white hats and all this stuff,
right.
Because of what I found coming out of the Fed. And, you know, I do track some of the people involved, and it's absolutely like this guy Michael Mukasey was the Attorney General for the United States under during 9/11. And he is everybody thought, oh, he's just horrible. You know, he's the guy who's trying all these bombers and killers and letting them go free. But from my research, I found that he was part of the good guys. He saw up front how corrupt our country had become and how many false flags are going on. And him and his son actually decided to get together and try to take down the cabal. I think he was – him and his son were the originals. His son was a DA in New York who ended up taking down Bernie Madoff. Now, Bernie Madoff wasn't a $50 billion Ponzi scheme. It was a $500 billion operation, computer trading operation, in order to pay off all the cabal and the Israeli Mossad and all that. So completely different. And to take those guys down, that's like taking down the people who control the deep state. And the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. And that's when that all started. And Mukasey was involved in that. And Greenspan was involved in that too. So it's hard to tell where the good guys are and where the bad guys are, especially right now.
Because
I do think people are being arrested, people being taken to Guantanamo and disposed of, shall we say. I do see a lot of body doubles. I mean, I can't tell you how many different Hillary Clinton faces I've seen over the past
Same.
Who's going to show up?
Dude, my wife pointed it out immediately when she showed up for the DNC. She's like, she's had a facelift or two. And I'm like,
could be so
maybe
different
face.
Entirely. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing, they got this thing called deep fake for video now.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
Right.
I actually had a conversation with my mom about it because she asked me, "Hey, what's the latest on Epstein?" And I was glad she asked, and we got into Pizzagate and all this stuff that she had never really heard before. You know, she's a Trump supporter, you know, and so I was trying to be delicate about, he's got some associations with Epstein. It's kind of TBD. But let me just put this out there, Mom. You know, they can fake a video of him raping a teenager. They can do that now and blackmail him with it because he would know that
damage has already been done.
The damage has been done. If this is released to the public will accept it. You know, prima facie. You know, so these are the times we're in, and you just don't know because we're all sitting behind screens. We're all at home. It's not like we can go do that investigative muckraking. You know, they're gonna put us in a free speech zone or some shit like that. So the deep fake. Yeah. That is a serious threat. Is it not?
Oh, definitely. And they can claim, oh, that's not Hillary can claim. That's not me raping a child. That's, you know, that's a deep fake.
So it on the other side of the token. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I saw Kamala Harris use it on an interview the other day, and her face was all distorted. You knew it wasn't her.
Oh,
didn't even
God.
Look like her. You know, they haven't perfected that technology yet.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, are they really trying to pass this off as Kamala Harris?
Yeah, we've been joking since we call it the Cerveza virus on the Zootitic.newscast because that's a better beer. right? We've been joking about Hologram Joe because this is the perfect environment for him to be running for president, where no crowds are allowed, and they could literally 3D animate him because they've got 3D animations that are so, you know, they're so lifelike. And he's already so robotic anyways. It would be easy.
If we go down this path, there's stuff I am not sure about. I have a feeling, though, that many Congress people have had something like a soul swap where it's no longer them. You even look in their eyes, it's like, that's not my congressman.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on
in
the hall of Congress?
Yeah. We've covered possession.
Possession. I mean,
there are videos of various outbursts, let's call them, from people who appear human, but they're clearly not like you and I. And so
there's some sort of infiltration going on there. We played this great video of Dershowitz when he's having this interview, and his eyes just bulge out of his skull whenever the term of "you have to take a vaccine, the state has the power."
Yeah.
And it's just like you like stop motion freeze on these facial expressions that he has, and it is something out of a Lovecraft novel. I mean, just bulging, demonic, like, wow. So there's something to that. I mean, you know, we've touched on the idea of, you know, do you take silver or lead, you know, once you get into the halls of power and you get the taxpayer money and you don't really have to do much and you get all these insider trading secrets, you know, do you take the Vatican bank account or do you resist and you don't sign the waiver that you'll pledge support to Israel, and you know, then you get the lead, which is like you get completely leveled out of the field of politics or worse. And, you know, there does seem to be that kind of paradigm is still in place amidst all this deck shuffling going on. And financially,
I think they have to keep it going. And I've been thrashing on Trump because he hasn't changed the market rigging structure in the United States.
Right.
It's 50 times worse than it's ever been.
Right. Definitely.
And so that's my only beef with him. I think behind the scenes, he is getting a hell of a lot done. It starts leaking out here and there. But there have been people told to stand down, people taken to Guantanamo to say lights out, nighty nighttime. And I do think a lot of that is going on. At the same time, I see where the bad guys are fighting back, trying to create a civil war type of environment within the United States. Because I never thought there could be a civil war within the U.S. because, you know, it's like, would it be against the Democrats, against the Republicans? Well, they live in completely different places.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I had this thought, Bix, the other day that they have actually created a civil war within our family over things like the mask. Mm-hmm. I mean, at our get-togethers and stuff, it's extremely tense and people are totally polarized and, like, you know, ostracized based on their viewpoints. And it's just getting to a feverish pitch. You know, we have to resist that. But, you know, the other side of civil war you brought up recently, I was really happy to see you do it because it's a topic we talk about frequently, and that's weather warfare. So we've got this whole Cerveza virus nonsense going on, which is, as far as we're concerned, just sort of authoritarian putsch.
Yep.
You know, regardless of what you think about the virus, does it exist, does it not, etc. We're not out of the woods, you know, as far as weather war is concerned either.
Mm-hmm.
And mentally, I don't even think we're at a point where it can be dinner table conversation. I've even brought it up, you know, a number of times, and it's almost like I'm not saying anything at all.
Right. It's just vacant stares. No way to comprehend the frame of reference for it.
Yeah. I actually posted a video back in 2012 where I was observing a huge chemtrail operation over my house, and it was like right around the time of Hurricane Sandy. And they, you know, there was this guy at the Hydrometeorological Prediction Center who coined the term Frankenstorm. And there were other like internet muckrakers who were, you know, observing very weird like weather disturbances in the radar signatures and stuff like that. And you've done some reporting on Sandy as it pertains to the financial markets. And that is one of the most fascinating like threads that I've ever heard you go down. Because it, tell people what the DTCC is and how that, how does that relate? How do you relate that to like an average American? What does it mean to them? And then if you could go into, you know, Frankenstorm and what happened there, because I agree with you that it probably was a contrived, you know, weather event.
Yeah. Well, the DTCC is a kind of the division behind the stock market, the bond market, all markets, the housing market.
Hold on. All markets?
Sure. Yes.
It's like a holding.
They tried to get cryptos. Well, yeah, it's they, their job, the job of the C, the DTCC is twofold. One is to settle trades, meaning they, you exchange ownership, you exchange contracts, you exchange money, you exchange title. That's what's supposed to happen on the stock market, right?
Mm-hmm.
But with high frequency trades, that can't happen.
Right.
So they're not doing that job. The mm-hmm. other is to hold custody of all this stuff so that the high frequency trades can happen. So they hold custody in the name of a company called Seed and Company, C-E-D-E, like literally meaning ceding over the rights to your property over to this this holding company.
Wow.
And you talk about insanity of the amount of assets this entity holds.
Right.
It's all the mortgage-backed securities. So all the houses in the world are pretty much thrown into mortgage-backed securities unless you own your house straight out. All the stocks, all the bonds, all the stock certificates, the bonds, the swaps, the swaptions, the COMEX contracts, you name it. And some people say, yes, the your Social Security number and your driver's license are owned by Seed and Company. They did a study of who is Seed and Company back in the early 70s, Congress did, and they came out and said, yeah, we found out who it is. It was a person, but we can't tell you who it is.
Oh, like, my what? God.
Interesting. Yeah,
some people think it was the Queen of England. Some people think it was like the M1 Asian, you know, head of the world. Some people think it was the Anunnaki. You know, you can just from that point, you can say, well, it could be anybody. But the reality is that the vast majority, as in probably over 90% of all assets that have some kind of title attached to them are held at Seed and Company in the name of Seed and Company. So it's really kind of, if you're looking for a, how do you control the world? Why not get your hands legally on all the assets of the world?
Right.
Now, is it enforceable? Can the Anunnaki or whoever it is, can the Queen of England come say, okay, I have the title to your house. I'm going to crash the monetary system. I'm the owner of your house. Give me your house. Well, you need a military to do that as well. There's certain laws that just can't be enforced if the people are screwed too badly.
Well, they have those militaries too, don't they?
They do, but to a point. I mean, that's why the beauty of the United States is, you know, there's at least one or two guns for every person in the United States. And nobody's going to try to overthrow us.
It's a check on that kind of legalese. But, you know, bringing up the Anunnaki, you know, what you've mentioned aliens. I've seen some of your posts recently about the moon and some of your dreams, it turning and, you know, the whole where do you stand on space in general and the space program? I mean, the space program, you see Space Force and Trump promoting it almost like a game show or something.
Right.
And I just don't have, you talk about counterparty risk a lot of times. It's very much trust the authority type of relationship one has to have with the space agencies. You know, they have a monopoly on the information. So the only way for us to like verify anything is to go out and do our own tests.
Or just get some night vision goggles and look up in the sky.
You talk about that a lot. Mm-hmm. I know Xavier has seen some UAPs or UAVs. Right. I mean, with the we talk often of the drone opticon, you know, which is depicted in that movie Elysium, where they've got sort of 24/7 drones, just, you know, nuclear, solar powered, whatever. They're going all the time. We've played on our on one of our prior video shows a presentation by NASA about their high altitude telescopy, which is actually balloon platforms. So, like, most people just assume, right, that, well, space is real. Yeah, we're in space. We've been there because we've got pictures of the Earth. But if you look at that NASA presentation about the balloon platforms, they could easily just have an array of high megapixel, you know, balloon, you know, lifted camera appendages. And you know, that's, to me, that's what Google Earth and DARPA, that's what they've been constructing with all this black budget money, is just a sort of like global surveillance grid that doesn't even need to be in space. It can just be high altitude.
It could just be 100,000 feet
and
up
then,
there.
And then Google, they own the sort of, you know, the visualization tool, which wraps an otherwise sort of flat map over the globe even according to Neil deGrasse Tyson, the sphere that they present is not even what he says we are. He says we're more like an oblate spheroid. So the perfect sphere that they show us is just, it's kind of, man, it's very suspicious.
It's a cosmological construct to a great extent. And I think it's been run with for a long time. It has a lot of psychological benefits. People don't question the limits or the extent of their realm. They think that we're on a terraqueous orb and there's finite resources and the world powers are the ones that have say over everything because we're all on a giant spaceship whirling, you know, six different directions through a void, and we're not going to contact anything and we're not going to come across any new discoveries. Everything's kind of already been found out. And I think that it plays into the whole climate change narrative as well, is that, you know, we've got to control resources. Agenda 21, everything has to be under a completely itinerated, cataloged basis. So, I mean, to an extent, like, we've been quarantined as a species in terms of our imagination about, you know, where we are, what we are, how we came to be for a long time. And that quarantining energy has just magnified more and more and more down to more minute levels. Especially this year.
You know,
well,
go ahead.
I think it, and I agree with you, and it's becoming more and more painful to be within this quarantine. And, you know, some of my psychic buddies are saying it's like giving birth. This is going to be like giving birth when you get squeezed through the birth canal and just literally your head, your body, everything's getting squeezed. And then you come out the other end, you're like, holy crap, I'm in a new world. I feel a hell of a lot better than I felt before. And I think that's what we're going through. We haven't even, we got at least a couple of years of this, maybe even up to 10. Cliff had us, if we survive, up over 10 years of this stuff before we come out the other end.
Meaning what exactly? Lockdown?
The mental, physical, emotional squeezing.
Hangover?
Humanity.
Yeah.
And what it is we're breaking free of the nanny state, of our controllers. And we might not have thought we were controlled, but we were. My friend Dick Allgaier loves to say, oh, they're never going to give up control. We have free will. We can decide not to do it. We can decide not to bail out the banks next time. Well, we can decide to go into this chaos.
I agree with you 100% on that. And that's why, really, a kind of catalyst for the creation of Zetidic News Network is the whatever you want to call it, the spiritual drive to have these sort of conversations where we can explore ideas. And our whole tagline, if you look up the definition of Zetidic, it's to proceed by inquiry. And I think your channel is a great example of that. You know, you just put out your perspective. This is what I'm looking at. This is how I see it. Y'all can agree with it. You don't have to, but just proceed by inquiry. You know, this isn't financial advice. I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not a medical expert. Proceed by inquiry. You know, that's why I think we resonate quite a bit. And you know, it is painful. I remember when I discovered that fluoride was being put into the water, but was not good for you. I was embarrassed. I was like embarrassed that I was fooled. And at a larger, like, macro scale, that I would agree, that's what humanity is going through. And there's going to be, you know, it's going to be tough mentally, spiritually, to accept, you know, like, if, for instance, the Earth is not a spinning globe, as has been described, that is real. That's painful.
Pretty bone crushing for a whole generation.
And I mean, just, you know, you don't have to make a firm position statement on it, Bix, but like, in this room
I love position statements.
I mean, the folks in this room, we're pretty well convinced, at least, that we're not what they say.
Order.
Yeah, what they say we are. And it's incredibly socially difficult to, like, carry out, you know, conversations sometimes when that's your perspective. Because it's still very – it's like the UFO subject was 20 years ago. You – going on YouTube and talking about, you know, your night vision goggles and seeing UFOs, like, that puts you in tinfoil hat cuckoo land territory 20 years ago. Now
it's admitted.
Now it's admitted.
Right.
Now everybody buys them off of Amazon.
Right.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, my position is, why can't both be true? And I think it is a little of both. If we... I do believe that we created this experience individually and collectively so that we can go through stuff like this, stuff that used to make sense and then all of a sudden changed.
Mm-hmm.
And what changed? And could it have been that all of a sudden we were put into a different place to live spiritually and we didn't even know it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, could it be that all of a sudden we break the veil and all of a sudden we notice, oh, we can exit the planet and, you know, the skies open up and yeah, we were on a flat plane with a dome over it, but now we get to go out into the universe and explore. You know, all these things are possible in the matrix that we call reality. Our reality is not real. We're living in the matrix. We came down here for a reason, a purpose, to grow spiritually, to change, to encounter things that we can't encounter in a different realm. And I think that's amazing and exciting. And yeah, I think both might be true given different either realms or if different things happen. Maybe we're just in this playroom for now until we get smart enough or mature enough so that we can go out into the real universe. Who knows? Who knows? But
yeah.
I do know that I came down here to experience the thing that I am experiencing right now.
Yeah.
And it's ballsy. It's ballsy, I think, to come down here on Earth at this point in time because everything is changing.
Definitely. And you could kind of see it as like a purgatorium. You know, we deliberately enter into illusion in order to shed the illusion over time and through different truth mechanisms and relationships in the incarnate realm, we actually do break that veil and can travel through our soul ship, so to speak. And in that sense, I think that, you know, knowledge and, you know, sharing perspectives, despite, you know, different epistemological differences, I think that's really where a lot of truth lies, is just the more perspectives, the more dispassionate viewpoints, the better. And unfortunately, yeah, I mean, we're in this time where the internet has democratized information to such an extent, and there's all these new exciting economic avenues, but there's still this weight and this drudge that has kept us back from the full articulation of these potentials. So,
I would say it's not a purgatory. I would say it's more like this is the real juice. The real juice is coming up against the worst obstacles in the world and overcoming them, knowing you're an eternal being on the other side, You want experience down here. Experience and to keep going, keep driving and fight through barriers and experience the bad stuff as well as how great is it going to be when we take out these criminals. Mm-hmm. You know, we get our little victories of, yeah, we got to arrest Jeffrey Epstein before he ran off to Ken Lay's Island. But if you imagine all the other, you know, revelations we're going to have because it's been so hard. If we came down to Earth and everything was hunky-dory and you lived in a world of wishes and rainbows and colored flowers everywhere and you didn't have anything to worry about, how can you grow and
it's the game of life. Experience?
It'd be boring. It'd be hella boring. So
right. I guess what I mean purgatorium is we have to purge certain things in this world as soul beings. We have to come down here for specific purposes in order to get rid of illusions through our unique truth testament. But yeah, I mean that's definitely the point is, you know, the purgatory may in fact be kind of the real juice too, that is a phase of spiritual growth. And that's kind of where, this world is right now. And, a lot of people though, it's just so much easier to not embrace the ambiguity of, where we're heading and just believe some expert authority or, you know, just, some manufactured consensus in the media or what have you. So, there's a lot of places that we need to be going. And I think that, away from a lot of these central combines, whether it's, Google or Facebook or YouTube or what have you, they're kind of part of the, illusion machine to a great extent. They thrive, and in a way that is their kind of role, and there's a learning process that has to take place where they serve their function for a time in helping to create a sort of mycelial or rhizomatic sense of communication and community through the interconnectedness of the internet. But then now they're wearing out their function a little bit. They're becoming parasitic, and they're not engines of connection and creativity that they once were.
Luckily, we have Theta.
Exactly. Yeah,
bringing it back to Theta and blockchain and where this is all going, you know, big subject of our discussions, Bix, on our cast is the technocracy.
Yep.
And where that is all going. And of course, if you look up the definition of Theta, one of them is a Theta wave. You know, and you know that they're partnered with Google, right? They're partnered with Samsung, some of the biggest companies on Earth. They're also one of their early use cases is VR, virtual reality, 360 degree video streaming. Technically impressive, of course, but the implications of it, you know, and its widespread proliferation, especially in 2020's context, you know, really makes you wonder, is this good? Is this bad? You know, Elon Musk was in the news today talking about Neuralink and how he's, you know, hooked up an array of electrodes, which he's going to demonstrate to the public. And, you know, he's got all sorts of grand visions about that. I mean, I think he puts himself in sort of the Ray Kurzweil technocratic, you know, elite category with his sort of, you know, continued promotion of this idea. Mm-hmm. He actually mentions, merging us with a, you know, the ultimate goal, merging with an artificial intelligence. And he mentions in his tweet, he actually said matrix in matrix. So we're talking about illusions here. And now, mm-hmm. you know, the youth of this country are they're learning online. Yeah. They're already attached to screens even before that. And parents, much to their chagrin. So now, I mean, how much longer do you think before we're all streaming Theta on a VR headset and, you know, like all the wearable devices now that they're promoting as a means to like track different health signatures and stuff like that. I mean, I see that as a major, major, yes, Internet of Things, 5G trend, but not a good one.
Not necessarily good.
What do you think?
I think it's like any new invention. You can use it for good or use it for bad. What people don't think about much is who today really hides their shit. It's the bad guys that are really hiding their shit. So we can flip it around and say, yes, everything has to be online, everything has to be out in the open, but you guys have to do that too, mm-hmm. if you're going to try to subject us to that. And, you know, is that kind of thing possible? I think with computers and the programmer attitude, the hacker attitude, it's hard to get away with stuff on the blockchain, truthfully. Mm. But we are headed into a sci-fi future. That's part of, I think, what is planned for humanity. That we planned this ourselves, and it absolutely introduces new obstacles and challenges, mm-hmm. and even a harder fight for our freedoms and things like that. I see it as the battle 2.0. After we get done with this and we kick the bankers out, the next battle is going to be over, you know, the technocracy and the AI world, and that's part of it. This is part of the experience. We don't want to beat the bad guys and then just kick our feet up for 1,000 years. We're going to need a new battle, and that's probably it. Sci-fi world is coming, but like any new invention or tool, you can use it for bad or good. And those are the kind of experiences I think that we chose for ourselves. Is like, it's the dilemma, the yin and yang. What should I choose? Should I take the easy way out or take the hard way out? Stick to my principles or look after myself? Or, you know, all these issues and questions that we're going to be stumbling across as we're birthed into the sci-fi future. We're just going to have to deal with them, and that's why we're here to it's all in the journey. It's not the destination. It's the journey. So I really don't want to win all these battles I'm fighting. I just want them to morph into something new and more exciting.
Well, I definitely appreciate that perspective, because I think a lot of people have a savior complex.
Right.
You know, they're looking for Donald Trump to just wave a magic wand. And it's like, don't you realize if you encourage that, you're actually asking for the problem you're trying to correct. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting dichotomy. I try to say,
you know, people say, who is Q? I said, we are all Q. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I just rewatched V for Vendetta. Everybody should rewatch that movie and apply
great.
It to what's going on right now. It's amazing.
I think we should all wear those masks.
Oh, yes.
Instead, they're asking us to wear masks. Let's get some Guy Fawkes masks and do that, right? Wouldn't that be awesome?
I have a cloth one.
That'd be brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, man, those are great. But that movie is, you know, you look at it and you, oh my God, they're describing exactly what's happening right now. And, you know, luckily it's kind of a happy ending in the end. People decide to take responsibility for themselves and stop ceding over the responsibility of their lives to the government, which we've been doing in the United States. We've been doing it for a long time.
Chronically.
Yeah, this is another subject, because, like, you know, people are upset. I had a really weird conversation with a colleague. He was an anti-masker, self-professed anti-masker. But then when I raise even most basic questions about vaccines, he automatically reverts to, oh, are you an anti-vaxxer? And it's like, if you agree with one, you agree with the other. And yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't say, you're going to lose credibility. I get that all the time. You're going to lose credibility. That's when you know you're onto something.
That's
good.
Right.
Exactly.
That's right. Because who's the manufacturer? Who's the arbiter of credibility that bestows it like the fairy godmother onto anyone who listens to anything? You know, like
CNN.
CNN. Right. Right.
Well, that's, you know, speak of CNN. You know, one of the reasons, obviously, we explain Zetidic, the ZNN. It's, I'm trying to invert what CNN's doing.
Right.
Instead of telling you what to think, we're presenting information and asking you to think.
Right.
Please think for yourself.
Please.
You know, whether it's credible or not, it's information for your infotainment. Please, you know, digest and don't hold us liable for anything we said. Well, we've taken a lot of your time, Vic. So, you know, we've only got 7 minutes left on our scheduled block. Xavier, I know you had some questions about some of the recent news about, you know, with some of the major financial institutions sort of looking at.
Well, you know, you had the IMF and Christine Lagarde back in 2018, late 2018, come out and, you know, talk about, you know, the cryptocurrencies and how, you know, there's a recent video even just a few days ago, I think, that it was from the IMF, and they came out and it was basically like an infomercial about cryptos. So I think that they – they're trying to muddy the waters with their central bank digital currencies and just proliferate them just like they do with all the other, you know, unlimited supply fiat, and just muddy the waters in the relatively technically illiterate public mind, and to get people to actually miss out on the real limited release, truly decentralized currencies. And I think there's a danger that this whole proliferation of, you know, digital wallets and, you know, COVID passes and all this stuff that they could kind of occlude or have like a surveillance backdoor into people's desire to even want to trade between CBDCs and cryptos, and maybe disallow that as much as physically possible. So I still think that, you know, it's like it's the whole stage of grief. You know, first there's anger, and then there's denial, and then you have bargaining, and finally acceptance. So it seems like the central banks are in like a bargaining phase right now, where they're like, "All right, we're gonna make you a deal, okay?
We're only gonna take capital gains when you sell into a dollar system, right?
Right. Well, you want digital currencies and you want QR codes and alphanumeric addresses. We'll give you that. It'll be through Bank of America and HBSC.
Shittier than all the other alternatives, like exactly. Libra, which never even materialized.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, but this is the birthing, and yes. There's all kinds of crazy cryptos out there. People are making mistakes left and right. I get that all the time. I don't know how to get my coins back. Well, why the hell just send them to some random?
Yeah, right.
So yeah, it's painful. It's birthing pains. Yeah. I would just say, as far as cryptos and the Fed just announced today, Fed Boston announced today that they will be working on the digital U.S. dollar on a third party blockchain.
Really?
And they're working with NFT, which means Lightning Network, Bitcoin, and Litecoin, if you ask me.
Wow.
Whoa. So that's really kind of opens up the door to, you know, Amazon. You know, because Purse.io, that went down last year. And that, to me, was kind of like an indicator. Like, wait, does this mean that maybe just Bezos will start accepting cryptos openly on Amazon?
You know? It's such a big thing to do. I mean, Trump would probably just take him out if he tried to do that without, you know. I mean, people get taken out all the time in this world if you're going against something.
That's true. I was just thinking, like, whoa. Because if you look at the Amazon versus BTC chart, you know, Amazon looks like this incredible, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity as a stock, but then in comparison over the same time frame to Bitcoin, it's like getting ready to dump again, you know.
Well, you know, after Chris Giancarlo admitted to him, Trump, and Mnuchin crashing the Bitcoin, they called it the Bitcoin bubble of 2017. Mm. In gold and silver, you know, all the mining companies would just crawl into their little corners. In the crypto world, all the programmers said, well, screw you. We're going to design systems and exchanges around you, get a decentralized finance type of world, give decentralized everything, decentralized exchanges, which are coming. I think they'll be very, very, very popular when the old exchanges all lock up and crash and everybody loses cryptos that are held in these centralized exchanges.
Definitely.
So it's definitely happening in I'm excited. Around every turn, there's something new, and that's why we're here, right? That's why we're here.
Absolutely.
Well, Bix, I don't want to take any more of your time. You've been gracious enough to give us an hour. Thank you so much for participating in this world first news category live interview on the Theta Network Backbone Anycast. Again, I'll be reposting this on our YouTube. And I'll be restreaming it with instructions on how to do that on the Theta Network, and I'll make a post about it. Appreciate your work. I'm a Road to Ruta subscriber, just by the way. And it is one of the coolest silver coins in the world. And I'd encourage anybody, if you want to learn more about Bix and his work, go to roadtoruta.com, become a private road member, and visit his YouTube and his Patreon channel as well. Bix, you got any parting words? Thanks again for doing this interview.
Hey, thanks for the invite. Yeah, let's do it again. And I think this is the latest interview I've ever done. So,
is that good or bad? I know you're on the West Coast, so.
I'm on this crazy diet, so it keeps me out of trouble.
Well, I figured you'd appreciate, you know, a after-dinner type engagement. We typically do late night. We're on the East Coast here, so it's almost 11 o'clock our time. So,
but hey, thanks for having me on. And any guys, anytime you want me back on, just give me a call.
Oh, thank you so much.
Awesome.
You take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a break. All right, we're back. We just took a break after our hour with Bix Weir, internet muckraker, financial expert, financial historian. It was a great interview, I thought. Look forward to getting y'all's feedback on that and maybe having Bix on at some point in the future.
Definitely.
Thought it was quite insightful. We were just talking about Bix's position and the whole flat earth, round earth, sphere earth cosmologies.
Mm-hmm.
And their interlocution with the global power structure. And we're just talking about various YouTube channels which have been banned, well, who delved into topics such as this.
Mm-hmm.
Underscoring yet again the need for a decentralized, censorless means of content distribution such as Theta. And I was just getting ready to show you Super Mario Galaxy as sort of an example of how easy it is to take a two-dimensional sort of flat image and wrap it around sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Super Mario Gravity. Really underscoring the whole magic of gravity. Because you basically you traverse this adventure on a variety of different planetoids. And there's this magic force called gravity, which pulls you to the sphere, but if you go away, you know, far enough away from it, you know, the gravity of another
right
pulls you in like it's supposed to do in real life.
And, you know, isn't there some levels where he can actually walk and like go a full antipode? Like, look at this. Like, oh, there he goes all the way through to China.
And where the force, you know, the force is supposed to come from the center. This actually sort of exposes how ludicrous the globe gravity situation is,
right?
You know, from a physical point of view,
in a purely fantasy kiddie game format,
yeah.
Like it's almost like a tongue in cheek. Like, oh, there it is. Oh, you thought you were viewing things right side up, but actually you were right.
Well, what you just
upside
saw
down.
Was the whole Wernher von Braun escape velocity mechanic.
That's
you have
right.
To, you have to jump into this star, which shoots you off at such a speed that you escape the gravitational force of one planetoid and then traverse, you know, this infinite space until you encounter another.
Uh-huh.
And then you get pulled into it and you have an adventure there.
Uh-huh.
But they play with planetoids at 3D and 2D in a very interesting way. I see a lot of... you know, and who's that flat earth guru?
Who
talks? He's like, I'm a video game designer.
Mark Sargent.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I mean, his whole thing is that gravity is real. It's just like electrical, micro electrical attraction or something. And I mean, maybe. But I think the broader point is. Yeah, you can make gravity real from a video game design standpoint. And it's like, okay, well, what if our whole realm is being treated like a video game, basically? and that people are just being convinced that it's things like gravity are real, but in fact they are something that we have no full understanding of, or maybe it's just density and buoyancy, and it's just kind of a made-up pseudoscientific concept like phlogiston used to be before they found out that, you know, oxygen is not something that's inhered in every single substance before it burns. So I would say that I kind of agree more with the latter, which is gravity is kind of like a phlogiston of physics. You know, it's this archaic concept, and you know, it's sort of a god of the gaps type construct within physics. It solves everything that seems to be inexplicable, and you see the influence of that cosmological edifice in even video games like Super Mario Gravity. You know, like, look at, like, you know, this is how sort of people imagine the universe is. It's just like a giant, like, air ocean.
And he doesn't basically need a spaceship.
He doesn't need a spaceship.
He's fine with the vacuum, the ultimate vacuum of space.
That's right.
No, but going back to our special guest, yes, Vix, you know, I mentioned in the interview some of his recent postings. He had some dreams, which he talked about with a purported psychic, Jenna Moonstone or something like that. And he was talking about how he saw the moon and in his dream, and the moon started to turn. It's like, it's not supposed to do that. You know, he mentioned bases possibly being on the other side, and, you know, maybe this was a premonition that, you know, all was going to be revealed. You know, you can interpret dreams in a number of different ways. I don't think he came to any definitive conclusions about it, but I found it interesting that, you know, what was unbelievable about the vision was that it turned and it wasn't supposed to. And Bix goes into how things are supposed to be, but the moon is actually the exception to all these things spinning. And so, you know, my dream interpretation, if I were to read him
right
as a psychic, I'm not saying I'm a psychic. I'm just saying this is maybe Vix's dream is saying that the moon is a key to understanding what's going on. And that's the symbol to in his dream anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's doing the supposed impossible is...
Which it should be doing every day.
Which it should be doing every day, but for some reason isn't. It should... It, perhaps it's just a sort of symbolic marker to him saying, hey, this is a subject that is worth looking into. You're now in an interview being asked about it. People are talking about it. There was the largest flat earth conference not that far away from where we're talking right now, you know, sure. And that happened recently. So it's the subject that's not going away. Maybe the dream was indicating that something is going to come out about this. Maybe, maybe he should look in that area.
Right.
That's just my thought.
I mean, would say so too, because I mean,
I wouldn't take it to mean that the moon is going to start spinning.
No.
But these things are symbolic. That's my opinion.
Right. No, I think that's a really good read. It's just sort of up my alley as well. Because, I mean, ultimately, the moon really is the moon is a harsh mistress, right? Even the Robert Heinlein, science fiction writer, who loved the whole fantastical notion of space travel and whatnot. Just that title kind of gives you a little bit of a hint. Like, the properties and behaviors and characteristics and vantage points of the moon kind of defy a lot of the supposed physical explanations that we've been taught. Upon real diligent scrutiny and forensic analysis, the moon is really a great smoking gun.
Yeah. Just a personal story in regards to that, which anybody can try themselves if they haven't already. I like to take pictures. I like photography lenses, all that. So I've always been sort of into that. What I've always wanted to do is capture one of these big moons, you know, that you see every so often. They appear to be huge.
Right.
Okay. It's beautiful. I want to take a picture of it. It never turns out like I see it.
Absolutely.
What the fuck is going on there?
Yeah. I that's a great point. I've tried to do the same exact thing. And it is impossible to capture that initial burgeoning of like one of these super harvest moons or something over the horizon.
Right.
Dude, it doesn't matter.
I've tried many different types of cameras in different settings, different times, different places. Right. It never looks like. And, you know, to be fair, through lenses, it never does look just like.
True.
But the relative size, it's always smaller.
Yeah.
It's what I would say is normal size.
Mm-hmm.
Relative to what it how it appears. And what do you think people have said when I bring this up?
Well, if they have the...
it's the R word.
Yeah, if they have the public school sort of fine-tuning explanation for it, it's refraction.
Relativity.
And relativity.
It's relative to whatever you're around.
Right.
I don't buy that.
Yeah.
Because I can frame something relative to something else and make it look huge. You know, I could take a picture of this bottle sitting in front of me in a certain way, and it will look bigger than you in the frame. So why isn't the camera depicting it the way, you know, in proportion to how it is appearing in frame to my perspective at that point? That's a big problem among many problems, which I think Bix's dream is kinda just calling out and signifies. So
that's a good point. I mean, yeah, the moon has always been such an amazing revelation in this whole line of research. Because, you know, just the instances, even on, like, the Islam flag, you know, you have the moon and you can see a star through it. So there's even, like, a lot of symbology in the ancient and not so ancient in the case of Islam wisdom traditions. But yeah, I mean, to me, how many people have seen that where it's like a partial moon, or it's waning or waxing, and you can see
the star
stars
through it.
Through it.
Yeah, we'll have to have Bix on again sometime and talk about this subject, because I did want to talk more about his dream about the moon, but we had there's so many great topics to talk about. But this was a key point I was prepared to sort of go into, as far as, you know, he had mentioned in one of his recent talks that you know, silver's been found on the moon. But again, and he agreed when we talked, you know, there's a high degree of trust that's just required to believe.
That's right.
Whoever is reporting that silver has been discovered on the moon.
Essentially, in toto, I mean, it is a 100% belief point of agreement. Because even the people writing this article, that it's just chain of command. It's just telephone. So, yeah, that is quite the interesting emblem there with the... a seal of Rimfran, the yellow. That's really... I haven't seen that flag before. Ah.
I've seen this video before.
Yeah, there. Yeah. A star being captured through the moon.
Up, Photoshop. Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. It's like your eyes, you know, are they always lying to you, or do you have to be convinced when it comes to preceding right, this phenomenon.
Right, right. So, well, that's the thing is you don't hear there are those people, but you really, you know, like at least in this room, not making a lot of claims. It's those in power, the authorities, the purported space agencies who are making a lot of the claims, and their evidence is oftentimes either non-existent or it's been
super shoddy,
destroyed. Yeah. Yeah, this is another thing I wanted to bring up with Vix.
This is such a huge because I mean,
for those listening, we're looking at an article on Zero Hedge about literal battle zones erupting all over America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about the commercial real estate becoming favelas,
yeah,
and now we're seeing that play out.
Big time.
You know, it started with, I mean, you could argue with the statue, you know, the organized pulling down of the statues, which is permitted by, you know, the politicians in power, mm-hmm. you know, in those jurisdictions, sort of allowing it to happen.
Which is you could argue it's a form of warfare, because when you desecrate cultural, you know, architecture and iconography under a political pretense, you know, that's sort of a form of occupation, you know.
Years ago, I did a banner hang off a highway somewhere in North Carolina, and it was one of these things where we got a permit. We're trying to hopefully get, you know, like the TV media to come out or whatever.
Right.
And I forget the actual issue at the time, you know. I think it was probably NSA spying related. If I had to, you know, hazard a guess, my memory's failing me at the moment. But I was just standing there doing whatever, hanging the banner over the highway and just milling about with people. And this lady came up to me and, you know, we got into a conversation and she was like, you know, what is happening on our TV is we do this in other countries, you know, before a military operation. That's what I'm really concerned about, you know? And I was just like, wow, you know, I'm hearing from somebody who knows they're in the military and they're telling me this is a military operation. So yeah, the,
battlefield,
the sort of coordinated, manufactured war. I mean, by proxy, little proxy armies, essentially.
I mean, what do you think all this Cerveza virus stuff is? It's like, warlike Munchausen by proxy type operation is, you know, we're being assaulted with this conviction by the authorities that we are all basically diseased or are about to be diseased or are about to spread a disease or we're just a disease. We're a virus. You see the subconscious messaging has like proliferated into society. Oh, we really need to stay away from each other because we're potentially all diseased. You know, it's this really misanthropic kind of neo-Malthusian anti-ethic, basically.
Yeah. My wife mentioned a report that she saw on Fox News about a new study says children have some of the highest levels of coronavirus, and these were asymptomatic children. And she's like, isn't that good news? Isn't that good news that they're asymptomatic, but yet they have the highest level of coronavirus? So what does that tell you?
That it's actually really easy to, it's like any other year, like even according to their numbers, the flu is far worse. It's been shown. They had to go back and redact a lot of these deaths. And now the CDC is recommending that people shouldn't be taking tests to see if they're asymptomatic or
look at this. Asymptomatic children have higher levels of coronavirus.
What?
And she's like, isn't that good news? Okay. That is just like,
it's hilarious.
Yeah. Making them. So you can be asymptomatic.
You can
and
have high levels of and coronavirus. I can't even, dude. So it's so lethal, it's so deadly,
that you have to get a test and can be completely asymptomatic in order to have it. It only affects 0.01% of people in an actually negative way. Well, it's like, what about last year? You, like, didn't tuberculosis supposedly kill 1.5 million people?
And it's of like, course. Yeah, there.
Well, we have treatments
not,
for that.
Not one more death. Not one more death. But there are deaths happening all the time they can't prevent, that they don't give a shit about. So this is the thing that really gets me about the mask. I'm not going to stop talking about the mask.
Never.
You know, people like want to just be like, listen, I get it, but you're supposed to. Look, I even heard some of these crypto guys. This guy I listened to on YouTube, mostly for crypto stuff, but he's freedom oriented, you know, and he was telling me his spirit guide said, you know, you gotta wear the mask for probably the next 2 years, just because people are so indoctrinated that you don't want to like disturb them. And I'm like, but then no, you're becoming then part of the
you're
problem.
You're complying with it at that point, or you're at least becoming subsumed by it. It's gobbling up.
How do they distinguish you from somebody who believes whole hog in Cerveza virus, you know, hoaxism? How do they distinguish? The only way to distinguish yourself is to not wear the mask.
Or to deliberately wear it. Wear something ridiculous.
Wrong or ridiculous. Yeah. Like you a Guy Fawkes mask, right. Or I've worn it over my eyes before.
Or like literally like transparent lace. Like I mean.
But this is the idiocy is the COVID-iacy is that they would allow that.
Oh yeah.
You know. It's not about your safety.
No,
it's about
not.
Your compliance. About right. You just adopting whatever it is that they tell you at that particular time.
I mean, I think the vast majority of people just capitulate to it out of, you know, fear of punitive action on the part of the store or other people harassing them. I really don't think the majority of people believe it has any real efficacy. I think that they think that, you know, hey, it, you know, it might prevent a few droplets. You know, maybe there's an old granny walking around that I shouldn't be near. I might as well wear it. But the vast majority of people don't want to be wearing it.
Right. You see that by the number of people who either wear it incorrectly or, like, leave it half off. Like,
exactly.
When they're talking or doing something that they want to do. And it's like, oh, so it's totally arbitrary.
Yeah.
It's totally arbitrary.
It's 100%.
How about going arbitrary. To the airport? I am dreading travel actually opening up because I know it's going to open up with all these bullshit restrictions, more restrictions, a new TSA minder to make sure I'm wearing my fucking mask. And it pisses me off because, you know, people like literally have said, oh, well, we had a new normal after 9/11. And I'm like, yeah, I disagree with that too.
I disagree with that one too.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's like wearing a seatbelt. Yeah, I disagree with the laws on that, too.
I disagree with that one, too.
So what happens now?
Yeah, there's
I'm
new
telling
normal.
You I disagree. Fucking
you can, you
that.
Can, you can go back to, like, well, we had a new normal after, you know, the women got the right to vote and there was the Federal Reserve. It's like, well, there were some problems with those new normals, too. Like,
right.
This whole notion that, oh,
let's
well,
just keep
pushing making
the
new,
Overton
new normals,
window,
right?
Yeah, forever. But... where I was going with the mask and the flying is I know it's going to be mandatory because I've already read the stories about guys being kicked off the plane or they stopped a flight and, oh, you basically have to make your – to be civilly disobedient today, you have to not wear a mask and you threaten holding up, you know, an entire plane's worth of travel – if you do that. So the social pressure, the peer pressure to like
sure.
just do it is so intense.
It's intense.
And I don't want to participate in that.
Right.
But the thing that really gets me is they're going to make me take it off to ID me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So am I going to have a new passport now where I'm pictured with my mask on? So you can actually, I saw an article, you know, the artificial facial recognition algorithms, they're not as effective with the mask on.
That's right.
Oh, you don't think so? maybe that plays into what we were saying before about it being a coordinated civil war. Mm-hmm. To, I mean, give people a cover to commit crimes, right, even with this surveillanceification that has, sure, happened, you know, in all of the major cities in which the disruptions are happening.
Yeah. Even in small towns now. Like,
oh yeah, like, sure,
Kenosha. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's like a...
That's what, somewhere like in Japan, right?
No, that's
in, I know it's in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
I'm just joking.
Yeah, it's like, it's got the population of about Chapel Hill or something.
Right.
You know, and we're talking about, whoa, curfews, checkpoints, roadblocks, flashbangs, riot police, and...
Bear in spray.
In a 70,000 person town.
It's coming to a town near you.
Yeah, it's
serious.
I saw
a good article on like Silver Doctors or something about, you know, the biggest mistake a prepper could make is thinking that the countryside won't be affected. You know, you think of the population centers and, you know, how far people could travel on foot. They could go anywhere in the country. You're going to have roving gangs of...
Marauders.
Marauders who,
brigands,
have already extinguished whatever resources they were able to collect and garner in their earlier pursuits within, you know, closer to the city centers. They're just going to keep going out.
I mean, Mad Max was supposed to take place in 2021, right?
I forget.
So you could have these souped up cars that are like armored vehicles with people in them with weapons that just come out and raid whole neighborhoods. And then, you know, people who are defenseless, who haven't coordinated with their neighbors on how to, you know, protect against this kind of threat, they'll just get Mad Maxed.
Yep.
And then they'll take over their house and, you know, it'll be Might is Right on a barbaric level. And it could happen. It could spill over.
We're
very quickly
on a razor's edge.
It's razor's edge.
Razor's edge level. We're already seeing that, you know, with the whole, forget the couple's name in Georgia. We talked about it before.
Oh, McCloskey.
McCloskey.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's
probably
happening.
Yeah, they're multi-millionaires. They probably have 100 guns. But, you know, they still got that one raided from them.
Right.
And it was, the, you know, they still complied and, you know, now they're, you know, the source of all this animus, and, you know, all are some of those people who were there before going to take them up on what they were saying earlier and come back with more aggression? I mean, under a different pretense later on? I mean, after the election, for example? I think we're going to have a completely suspended election. I think it's going to be way worse than Bush-Gore.
Trump is already sort of foreshadowing that.
Yeah.
The whole mail-in ballot debacle, he's already saying, you know, I don't want that to happen. He may not be able to stop it from happening. You know, he's one person. You know, even if he wanted to, he couldn't stop it necessarily because of all the locally rigged rules and regulations around how voting is conducted. Many of these jurisdictions are democratically controlled. So if there's a political will to carry out, it doesn't matter if it's criminal.
Right.
He's already done that.
Well,
that's
like,
but
Kissinger,
he's saying,
yeah,
he said in a statement, you know, I don't want it to happen. If it does, we may have to redo it. We've mm-hmm. already seen hanging chads, the crime of Bush and Kerry.
Right.
And it's not like I wanted Kerry to get in there. Mm-hmm. They were both from the same fraternity.
Right. Well,
and that's the contrivancy of the right. whole charade, the political charade, the illusion of choice. Vote. Mm-hmm. If they, who said it? Was it Lysander Spooner or Mark Twain? I forget. If voting mattered, they wouldn't let us do it.
Yeah.
I mean, give me a break.
I think that was Mark Twain.
Yeah.
Totally. I couldn't agree more with that analysis. I mean, look at Israel. Netanyahu's, they've had three different elections, and, you know, they've had to redo it every single time because the guy won't let go of power.
Right.
So, I mean,
He's such a gangster, oh, dude.
He's a mobster.
Isn't he such a mobster?
And then you had the other mobster, Hillary Clinton, come out today and tell Biden, under no circumstance should you accept accept defeat. So it's like, wow, they're really gearing up for a huge, you know, cliffhanger showdown. And to a great extent, this is how they're staying alive. Is they have to create a massive countrywide, everyone in attendance, everyone paying attention to this kind of political Super Bowl. And it's how they keep people fixated to the mainstream media. It's how they keep, you know, the ratings up. And
but, like, the criminality is really, you know, we've talked about taking the velvet glove off. Have you heard of this woman, Donna Hilton?
Probably SJW.
Dude, get ready for this one. She is... She's featured at the DNC. She was convicted of murder and kidnapping and implicated in a gruesome 1985 torture and killing case, was featured as a criminal justice reform advocate.
Uh-huh.
So she was like, you know, like squeezed this person's testicles with pliers and like was actually, I think she served time, convicted.
Yep. So like a social justice assassin, really more apropos there. That's really something, man.
So incredibly
25 years.
So incredibly honored and humbled to have been asked to participate in the preamble of the Constitution for the DNC tonight. With deep thought, I have accepted this opportunity to represent the millions of Americans who've been left out and shut out. Okay, listen, I believe in a second chance,
sure,
right? But you add up all the scum. I mean, there's plenty of scum on the Republican side too,
man.
But they take it to a whole nother level here.
Well, and let's not mention the fact that Kamala Harris presided over a pedophile priest case. And she helped throw it out.
Just like Hillary Clinton, you know, her faith in lie detectors test. Remember that? One of the earliest victories she had as a lawyer was getting a guy off who had raped like a 12-year-old girl. And she was like permanently damaged,
mm-hmm.
you know. And she said that she got him off with a lie detector. So that's – she laughed about the fact that destroyed her faith in the lie detector test as being a relevant metric for telling the truth. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
But she was also appeared in this video, and we were talking to Bix about deep fake.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, you've watched this video where she's giving this speech. This is where my wife said, you know, she's had one or two facelifts. I'm like, facelifts? This could be a fucking hologram.
Right.
This could be a total 3D deepfake representation.
It kind of looks that way. Okay. All right. In that particular photo, doesn't her hair look too small for the size of the rest of her face? Like, am I seeing that correctly? Where if you look at her hair... Her brow and her eyes, it doesn't look like her hair.
She's always changing. I remember how she looked before she went into her daughter's apartment that time she was caught collapsing. I'm surprised, dude, they rolled out Bill again at the DNC. And I'm like, how is that guy still walking around?
Man.
He looked so bad in 2016. Can you believe that was 4 years ago?
Yeah. And the guy is just... There was one guy who rabble-roused at, you know, trying to call out Bill on Epstein Island and stuff.
I saw that.
Yeah, I did see that. So... And that's the thing, is they just pretended like he was in the audience and just kept talking, you know, and because that's their training.
they just have to ignore all criticism and pretend like, you know, the plebs can't touch them or question them. They're just going to squash them like ants. And it's just amazing that this mobster family is still out there, you know, operating basically with impunity, because, you know, they uphold the superstructure. They help, you know, keep left blue boomers mostly still glued to the screen.
I just don't understand why. It really saddens me when Bill Clinton ever comes up and I bring up the Epstein thing just to glaze over. I've had friends and family say they would like to eat dinner with him and talk to him about, you know, what it was like to be the president.
Right.
I'm like, seriously? That's what you want to talk to him about? How was it flying on Air Force One? What kind of chips and soda did they give you? Like, seriously?
Right.
What I'm really interested in is the how, you know, Ghislaine and that whole deal is kind of been sort of not in the news at all.
Well, imagine that.
And I recently came across some, you know, allegations that, you know, there's a network of submarine ports, you know, in that area.
Mm.
And I even saw some articles about Epstein, you know, participating in submarine tours and taking people on submarine tours. And then I see Ghislaine is involved in this non-profit organization that's trying to set up a sea community.
Terramar,
mm-hmm. That's right, which is outside of all governmental jurisdictions,
right.
Which is very interesting when you get into maritime admiralty law and, you know, the law of the land and mm-hmm. all of the, you know, uniform commercial code issues that Jordan Maxwell talks about, and mm-hmm. which we touched on with Bix, you know, the whole collateralization of your Social Security, your soul, essentially, your future labor.
But I mean, doesn't that look like her face is superimposed? Just going back to the visual here.
Yeah, if you're if you're listening, head over to zetidic.news. There's a video component here. We are, as we're gesticulating about potentialities with the Epstein Ghislaine sex crime debacle situation.
Saga of unending
proportions. I've got a still shot of Hillary Clinton, or supposedly Hillary Clinton, in a recent video posted for the DNC ceremonies that are going on, her talking a bunch of shit about, you know, Trump and whatever. But I mean, in the era of deep fake, who can really determine? I mean, going back to the Theta issue as well, I mean, you know, you could get a very blurry, pixelated image on your screen and have no way of knowing whether that's actually Hillary Clinton on the screen or not. So, you know, when you're thinking about your leadership, just think about that. I mean, this definitely looks like some Photoshop.
It looks like something's going on, especially if you look around the chin and the shadowing with the hair. And just the shape around the right side of her chin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole section right in there.
Right here.
That looks real fishy to me. And her whole chin resolution, it looks like they're trying to, airbrush her double chin, her, old woman chin.
Yeah.
You see that chin stuff going on?
Yeah, it's normally with, CGI humans
right.
or humanoids, there's the uncanny valley where it's, they can get pretty close to, you know, lifelike, but there's something missing. But here's my point. When we're talking about soulless or possessed entities
right.
who never looked human-like to begin with, I think that's more easily faked. And I'll never forget the time I was in Washington, D.C. at the airport. I was, maybe it was New York, JFK, and I was going through customs, and I encountered my first TSA hologram, a line minder, this like virtual stand with a holographic TSA agent standing there. And it was like projecting on this plexiglass, very rudimentary technology. And I was like,
right.
Oh, okay.
This is where we're heading.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is Elysium type robot, you know.
Simulacrum.
I can't even talk to this person. Yeah. You're telling me what to do. Are you fucking kidding me?
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
And people do.
People just follow. Isn't that crazy? That they're going to come out with literal digital representations just barking establishment orders at people through a hologram, and people will comply as if it's like an actual person.
Yeah, I love this part of Futurama, the Matt Groening, you know, Simpsons derivative. They have, in the future, you know, public figures and other, like, important people depicted as heads in a jar. You know, so they still carry out their life as a head in the jar, and they, you know, throw them in there for comic relief at various points. And you know, I know I've seen an episode where, you know, they got a Donald Trump one, they got Hillary, and so on. And I just think it's a funny, sort of poignant cartoon, you know, reference that probably, you know, I don't know, maybe 10 years, we're going to look back and be like,
oh, Lord.
Oh, look at the predictive programming of Futurama, you know,
yeah.
It was, you know, just like people do with The Simpsons, right?
That's right. Well, because this goes back, I mean, like, even, like, kiddie shows from the 90s, like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, their, like, main Commander Lord is the, I can't remember his name now, but he's in this giant tube, and he's, like, he's this face that's, like, talking to the Power Rangers as a disembodied, like, godhead. And it's like, it goes back to the whole, like, Faustian construct of the homunculus. And it's like a sort of detached, removed consciousness. Right. And it's almost like the whole transhumanist fetish is to try to bring that about, is to try to craft a kind of homunculean simulacrum to project or to contain human consciousness. And you really could, I mean, there, have you seen this Keanu Reeves movie, Replica?
I have not.
Ooh, that one, it literally is revelation of the method, in your face, DARPA level, consciousness transference, cloning, cloning stuff, replicas, yep. It's like, tries to one-up Ex Machina.
I'll have to check that one out.
Definitely check
that.
Oh, that's
that. Pretty recent, 2019.
Yeah, it came out last year.
Interesting.
Right before all this Cervasivirus stuff hit.
Back when people went to the movies. Hey, I want to bring up to you an interesting factor in all this Cervasivirus is the effect it's had on time perception.
It's unbelievable. 2020 is almost three quarters the way.
Well, not only that, but I have witnessed the phenomenon of people placing events that happened in January in 2019.
Absolutely.
Because it's really almost like 2020 started in February.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways. Now, for people in China, maybe it started in January, you know. As far as that goes, but you get my point. The whole Cervasivirus thing is like driving everything that's happening in 2020, and it was just funny. And I don't know why I'm bringing it up now. I just feel like it needs to be explored further, the effect it's had on people's perception of time. You know, this that 9 to 5. 40-hour work week, all of that motion that was actually in many ways perpetuated by the debt-based monetary system, driving us like pheromones drive ants. That all that activity stopped. The travel, ritualistic vacations, the commutes to work in many cases. I mean, there many are still happening. That it's not like it's completely turned off. But time has changed.
Definitely.
People's perception of it has changed. And I know I've read some things postulated that, you know, we experience more information in like a day than a man would experience in a year 100 years ago.
That's a very interesting thought there.
And I just have to wonder how that affects people
that's and their
perception
point.
Of time.
It would necessarily almost relate to like, you know, the economic term hyperstagflation.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like time is becoming hyperstagflated.
Mm.
Where it's the whole paradox of time flies when you're having a good time.
Exactly.
And it comes to a standstill when you're not.
It is a function of our perception. And it is, to use a globalist, oft-used phrase, it is relative.
Mm-hmm.
It's relative to your experience. So I just think on a collective level, though, that's always been true.
Yes.
And that's always been something I've taken note of. You know? But on a collective level, I feel like time has definitely changed. The collective perception of it has changed.
Well, here we have another on this, going back to the visuals here. We've kind of let some of these trailers run after the replicas trailer, and this one is called The Quake. And just, I guess it was a couple weeks ago, there was supposed, or like last weekend, there was supposedly a mild earthquake.
Right.
In
Sparta, North Carolina.
In Sparta.
Yeah. What did you make of that? Because I didn't feel it.
I didn't feel it.
But you know, some friends of mine in Bracy, which is further east and more north than we are from Sparta, they felt it. Now, I could have just slept through it.
Right.
TBT, truth be told. But I actually meant to go look at the seismographs and sort of take a look at what the internet is talking about with respect to that, because I don't automatically think it's a natural event. I don't automatically think it's contrived, but it deserves, you know, investigation.
Right.
You know, I hardly ever believe at face value, you know, what the Weather Channel tells me. They're like literally like owned by Microsoft, you know? So,
right.
I wanted to get more into the weather war with Bix, speaking of that, because
definitely.
Because we got off on this jag about the DTCC, which is the holding, like the clearinghouse for all these financial instruments. But what he had reported on, which I found so fascinating and synchronistic with my own investigations at the time, was that this Frankenstorm, Hurricane Sandy blew in, which I was independently observing and others were noting as being potentially manufactured, caused a flood on, you know, the to the vault in New York City or New Jersey, somewhere in there. They and all these, you know, trillions of dollars worth of assets were all ruined by the flood. And the location of this vault is subterranean, so it has all the safeguards to be sealed from water. But it wasn't. It was left open during Frankenstorm, where tons of water was not only anticipated, it had already happened earlier in the hurricane's path on the East Coast. So his conclusion was, okay, this was allowed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was also a manufactured event and planned. And what was also very interesting is it was on Water Street.
Oh.
So I will have to have him back on and like revisit that, because it's great, you know, for those uninitiated into like how weather war can just occur and it be, you know, contrived at the same time made to look like a natural disaster. But mm-hmm. there could actually be a legitimate like man-made catalyst behind it. But also for what purposes? You know, some foreign leaders have accused our government of causing droughts. We literally did do that, I think, in mm-hmm. Vietnam, or we did the reverse, where we caused floods. But Bix goes into this. It was on Water Street. It was left open. After the flood went away, what did they do with all this stuff? Burnt it.
Mm.
Well, and the trailer that just happened before this one, called The Wave, it depicts this, you know, massive tsunami or something, but it's actually just a wave that accesses a supposedly remote, like relatively safe looking mountain community or village. And that's kind of what would happen if, for example, like the Hoover Dam busted. Like if they, you know, opened a destruction portal by destroying the Hoover Dam. I mean, imagine how much downriver damage that would cause. And that could be the result of a quake, for example, that they, you know, fabricate or promulgate in some way. And it's just another one of these act of God type weapons. Right. And it's not directly connected with the weather, but it can be seen as a natural event. I mean, there's so many different kind of tricks up the sleeve, as it were, when it comes to bringing about calamity or some sort of cataclysmic event.
Right.
And I don't think that any consideration has been spared when it comes to these upper echelon types. I think that they have all the time in the world,
right,
to think about these things and to coordinate with the stolen resources that they have.
Absolutely.
So, I mean,
so installing a microwave array up in Alaska somewhere, that is barely a pet project.
That's barely just a pet project.
Yeah.
Stratospheric aerosol injections, that's like a hobby for them.
Yeah, because we're still talking about only like $10 billion or whatever that it costs. That's nothing compared to these
peanuts.
People. Yeah.
Peanuts.
Yeah, it's really incredible.
And I wanted to bring up BlackRock, of course, too, when he came across the DTCC and also the Bank for International Settlements, the IMF. That kind of ties in with this stuff. Like, I do still think there is a danger that the liberatory potentials of cryptographic currencies, which there are plenty and many, could be swallowed up by the general just obedience complex of yeah. the masses and the relative lack of zetetic curiosity in research capabilities and investigating things that are outside the purview of what's considered appropriate and not taboo, you know. So I think that there could be a taboo complex that they try to project over things that aren't, you know, safely verified by the experts at Visa. And, you know, we're here with the cybersecurity firms to make sure that all of your transaction data is completely 100% verified on this government-approved blockchain, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's that danger there where a lot of the best elements of crypto could kind of be swallowed up by these, you know, financial oligarchical slash big tech technocrat next gen robber barons with their CBDCs and their pre-existing mega institutions like the DTCC and the IMF and these huge
equity firms like BlackRock and stuff. I mean, that is definitely a danger. But the thing is, there's so many of them out there. They cannot. I don't think they can just shut off the internet and get rid of everything.
It's too complicated. It's too complicated at this point, and there's too many, like you said, hacker culture.
Yep.
Types out there who can stand up their own network and overcome that.
Definitely.
But yeah, to your point, I wanted to just bring up, you know, the servile character of the people is really the biggest.
That's the biggest obstacle.
It's the biggest enemy that we have.
It really is.
And this is why I think if we treated the public water fluoridation program with even like 1% of the type of ire that is generated from this Cerveza virus idiocy,
right,
we could turn things around. We could. I really think if we remove nationally, you know, fluoride from the water, we stop the other, you know, intentional industrial like contamination of our water supply, and people, you know, if they just made that one change,
that would start a domino effect.
We're talking about an immediate 5 to 10 point IQ gain on average. You know, it's going to be higher in some populations, lower in others, but you know, we'll get, you know, at least 3 to 5 points of collective IQ improvement. And if we're going to even begin to talk about these complex financial institutions and the technologies and the alternatives and the histories, people's IQ have to be higher.
Yep.
They will not listen to any of this. And the reason I'm on, if you're not watching, you're listening, head over to ztitic.news, check out the video component of this. I'm showing our Gab page. I joined Gab with the ztitic news network. We're still trying to, you know, besides Theta, YouTube, etc., we're trying to explore different platforms. I went on there, set up a little profile. I made an announcement. I said the ztitic news network is an alt media news cure creator promoting the ztitic method in news consumption and analysis, which is to say we discourage our audience from dismissing, also known as censoring, information out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, our operating pedagogy is to encourage boldly proceeding by inquiry, regardless of a seeming impossibility. And that's all I said was just, you know, this is what we do. You check us out. If you don't agree or whatever, you know, that's your prerogative. And like the one comment was, you mean unload a pile of biased garbage and hope that the reader won't have brains or willpower to verify? I think we already have a few networks for that. It's like clearly this person didn't spend any time whatsoever digesting anything that was on the website. And this is the kind of servile character that I'm really talking about. Like, this person isn't willing. He's talking about the reader won't have brains or willpower to verify. It's like, hello, did you read what I said? That's what I'm encouraging everybody to do with the information that we discuss.
And it's like, well, okay, everyone likes to use the word bias as a way to dismiss something.
I'm not afraid to say that we're biased.
No, I
am biased.
It's a mythology to think that there's some sort of bias exempt perspective. Everyone has a bias towards certain things. That goes without saying. So it's up to the person, to have the brain power to navigate the biases and maybe assemble their own. Guess what?
This
biased picture.
Pure projection.
Yeah.
Projection. He's talking about himself.
Sure.
Not having the willpower to verify or the brains. He's literally talking about himself. And this is all I'm saying about the fluoride is he's right.
Oh.
You got to have the brains and the willpower. And what does drinking fluoride do to those two things? It diminishes your brain power and it diminishes your willpower. And they go hand in hand.
Absolutely. You know? And then also, you know, the whole allopathic petrochemical pill pushing pimps, you know, they're also, how many antibiotics have fluoride in it? Probably does, by like all of them. So it's like they're giving it to you in other converted forms as well that you think are medicine. They're supposed to target certain symptoms and make you better. But at the end of the day, you're still continuing. Boys.
And if you're unfortunate enough to have spent any time in a COVID ward, I'm sure your options are fluoridated hospital tap water, or we've got your garden variety Pepsi Coke products that you can get from our cafeteria with our highly brominated, fluoridated flour, you know, white flour based, processed food packaged goods on a styrofoam tray. Mm. Really, the worst kind of nutrition. I mean, besides a prison, I think probably hospital prison. They're kind of like.
Probably part and parcel to a lot of the same investors.
Prison, yeah. Hospital, and airplanes, all yep. Kind of the same sort of supply chain. Anyways, yeah. It's been real, Xavier. I appreciate you joining. I'm gonna send you another 1,000 T fuel for your participation. I'll have to ask Bix since for his address. I don't have it, but in this world first. A live stream on the Theta Network. Check out the website ztitic.news. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe, share, comment, and email us if you want. You can also come onto our site and subscribe to the audio-only podcast by your platform of choice. You can also visit our Instagram at ztitic_news_network. Or our Twitter, which is essentially the same, but at twitter.com. And look out for new articles, new video postings, and probably in the next few weeks, we'll have another episode.
We definitely looking forward to the CNN contributor element coming live on the horizon.
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be big because, I mean, how many people are getting knocked off these major... networks. I mean,
too many. And
too many.
You know, we're this is still in flux. So if you're interested in contributing, if you, you know, want an outlet, hit us up. There are different means to reach me. We can talk about it, but I may just have like, you know, permanent, if you want like a permanent fixture on our news channel, if you're like a regular, you know, content, generator, in a news category, let us know. We'll consider it. And we're just going to build out these features and more to come on the contribution side of things.
Awesome.
That's it from Dave signing off.
Signing off, Xavier.